friends and enemies. Welcome to yet another edition of the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast, part of the CBP Media Network. And today I am not doing this solo, but Joey is not here. But I do have somebody that is with me. Mark, take it away. Who are you? What are you all about? So people are prepared for when you were talking about these stories for today.
Hey, everybody. Thanks, Len. And thanks, Joey, for asking me to fill in wherever you are. I guess you're in Jamaica right now. But my name is Mark Jeftovic. I run a company called EasyDNS as my day job. And by night, I am the bomb thrower. I write a blog at bombthrower.com. I write a newsletter called The Crypto Capitalist, which I'm actually slowly backing out of and rebranding to The Bitcoin Capitalist for obvious reasons. And a relatively new follower of the show, and I'm thrilled to be here. So
thank you very much.
To host Saturday Night Live, except it's the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast.
It's a lot of fun, and you'll be able to fit in no problems whatsoever. Joey's still, yeah, like you said, he's enjoying things in Jamaica where everything is airy and sunny. Over here, not so much. It's cold and not so sunny, so he picked the right time to disappear from Southern Ontario to find some warm spot. But that's him, and we're here freezing our whatever off. But before we go any further, I just wanted to make everybody aware that if you have not, I suggest listening to us on the Fountain platform. It's a great place to listen to podcasts, and while doing so, you're going to get paid Satoshis for doing it. Why not? It makes sense. You're going to get paid in the hardest asset in the world, and it's just a great place to listen to podcasts. So if you haven't done so, check it out. If you have any questions to do with the app, let me know. I'll be happy to help you out. But also, we have a few comments that were some people left some comments for us in the Fountain app. Number one, we have Joey's Achilles. He's been sending us notes all the time. He says, I love the transparency during this public interview process. The auditioners for the new co-host has been great candidates. Keep up the great work. Adrenaline again. So thank you very much for that comment from Joey Achilles. And Mo BTC Dick got the Sunday blues, but sats anyway, sent us some more sats. __ writes, I really enjoyed the humor and Canadian perspective about how fucked North American is. Keep up the great work. As an American, I enjoy hearing other perspectives from outside the U.S. about our economy. And Norman Remnant says, keep on keeping on, Joey and Len. So anybody that wants to write in, I'll be happy to read some of the great comments that you do that you leave for us. And thank you for everyone that done so, because they left us with some Satoshis, which is great. And that's it for the housekeeping. Mark, I think we should just rhyme off the price of Bitcoin if you have that handy in U.S. dollars.
$17,209.56, up 1.1% in the last 24 hours.
That's some very detailed stats. And Canadian dollars were $23,459. So we always look at the U.S. side of things, a little bit over 17K. We've been steady holding in that range for some time. When is the pump going to happen? We'll see, because, well, we have a Federal Reserve meeting coming up very, very soon. And when they increase the rates, which is going to happen, that may be signaling that a pivot is upon us. But with that being said, I'm going to dive right into the A-Base news. Bear with me, Mark. This is going to be a lot of fun. And we're going to be talking about the clown-based financial news. And the clown, you know, this financial news this week doesn't disappoint. And, you know, every week, it's always something good to talk about. And on the CBP, we talked about the topic of the FX swaps and this debt that we discussed in previous episodes. And for those who are unaware, this is the $80 trillion, with a T, blind spot that the Bank of International Settlements has identified as something that could bring down the entire global financial system. Some very strong words. To put things in perspective, this amount, $80 trillion, is greater than all the U.S. dollar in circulation. That is a lot, considering how much QE was done in 2020 and 2021. Let's go back a little bit. Remember the Lehman Brothers, that whole episode when it collapsed? That was the largest corporate bankruptcy in U.S. history. The collateral damage was felt just about everywhere. But that was only, and I say only, $619 billion. That is less than 1% what we were talking about with respect of this financial FX swap garbage. That is an insane number what we're dealing with. So in other words, this is going to make the Lehman Brothers look like small potatoes when sizing things up for this potential collapse. I'm saying it is going to collapse, but there's always the potential for the FX swap market to just collapse. And if you think this foreign exchange debt swap market just came out of left field, got some news for you. It didn't, because it has grown from $55 trillion a decade ago to $80 trillion just right now. And FX swap deals total about $5 trillion a day in trades. So this is not something that came out of left field. It's been growing steadily for quite some time. In fact, non-US bank and pension funds have twice as much FX swap dollar obligations as the amount of dollar debt that is listed on their balance sheet. Oh my God, talk about a house of cards. What's troubling though is nobody can identify where this debt is and how much it's worth in total. This $80 trillion is just an estimate. That is scary. This sounds like SBF stuff that is running the FX swap show. But enough about this ticking time bomb. I did mention the name SBF. Well, there's a story that's kind of related to that. I'm not sure if you heard about this, Mark, but did you hear that Goldman Sachs, they're going to be trying to take advantage of this fall of FTX, and they want to get more exposure into the digital asset market. And they're looking to spend tens of millions of dollars to scoop up or start a crypto company, as they feel it's time for, quote, more trustworthy regulated crypto players, end quote. I don't blame them for exploring this option. They're in, you know, they're a business. After all, they're trying to improve their revenue and their profit. But what I fear is they are going to get friendly with the shitcoin market. Banks are already dealing with the ultimate shitcoin, the US dollar. So why wouldn't they try to peddle some other shitcoin to help pad their pocketbooks? It only makes sense. And I have a question to do with all this. Will they be offering anything that could be even remotely FDIC insured? If not, you know, is this something we could really be trusting for the bank holding on to our assets, our digital assets? And it would be little recourse for customers should there be a hack or the funds lost in any which way. And if it is FDIC insured, doesn't this give exposure of all US dollar shitcoin holders to potential shitcoin rug pulls, because the government is going to be backing some of these FDIC insured accounts? It's hard for me to see a silver lining from all this. But then again, it's maybe just being the guy that's looking at things with a glass half full. But all this leads me to is one of the biggest stories that we should be talking about: crude oil. And a great deal of the U.S. might is tied to the petrodollar. The U.S. dollar had the good fortune of wealth preservation, comparatively speaking, and this is due to the petrodollar system. But this system is under attack. Case in point, the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia. They're the world's largest exporter of crude oil. All right. So we're not talking about a flyweight here in a crude oil game. We're talking about a monster player here. And look at the optics. Xi Jinping, he visited Saudi Arabia this past week, and he did so to attend the first China Arab State Summit. And when he arrived, there was a 21-gun salute to honor his presence. Jets painted the sky with colors of the Chinese and Saudi flags. And not to fast forward things too much, but MBS was there. He made an appearance when Xi was setting off to China, and he did so because he's giving his best wishes, because it looks like they may have formed a potential bond or strategic alliance, which makes sense, because if you look at these two countries, they're good strategic partners for each other. Saudi has a lot of oil they want to sell, and China, well, they'll be there to buy it up, and it will help pave their Belt and Road initiative. And how are things going with the U.S. and Saudi? Well, let's recap. President Biden, before he became president, once said of Saudi Arabia, quote, "We are going to, in fact, make them pay the price and make them, in fact, the pariah that they are," end quote. Very strong words from before he was president. How about Saudi officials refusing to accept calls from President Biden? And he was doing so at the time when he was trying to ask for an increase of output. This was at the outbreak of the war in Ukraine. And this goes to show you how far the relations have deteriorated between the U.S. and Saudi Arabia. Last August, just in fact, Saudi signed a military cooperation agreement with Russia. Saudi Arabia is the world's top arms importer. Again, get this, Russia is the second largest weapons exporter after the United States. Again, we have good partners here. I remember a time when Saudi Arabia was a strong U.S. ally. In fact, the U.S. used Saudi soil to help launch Desert Storm in the early 90s. Those days are gone. There's a noticeable shift in loyalty And the deterioration of the relationship between Saudi and the United States is, you can't really hide this. What does this all mean to the U.S. and the U.S. dollar? Well, in the words of Jerome Powell, pain. How bad? Well, let this one soak in. China's President Xi was proposing, or has proposed, yuan settlement of oil gas trades with the Gulf states. If accepted, this move rug pulls the U.S. as central banks worldwide. They will not have to need to stockpile U.S. dollars. They may have to start at that point hoarding yuan as a way to start settling trading oil, in fact, with Saudi Arabia. The demand of the U.S. dollar would potentially plummet as a result, and so will the purchasing power. But don't worry, I'm sure that Chinese manufacturers will give a good deal to Western nations to buy up Chinese-produced solar panels. They'll be happy to sell less. And I bet a good chunk of these solar panels will be non-functioning once the three-year warranty expires. Either that or the planned obsolescence built in the product will make them outdated and ready to be replaced in a few short years. And we call that a feature. But back to oil. Accepting yuan for gas and oil, it's a bombshell development, and it would radically alter the world order as we know it. And sadly, people are not talking about the story all that much. Because we, you know, one thing we can't do is print our way out of this. And the reason is, well, the people that have access to the creation of money, they're only going to help out the select few. Not us. We're the majority. We're not the few. Example, the European Central Bank. From Bloomberg. Staff representatives at the European Central Bank are disappointed that a planned pay raise does not make up for inflation that currently 5 times the official 2% target. They want to amend their 4.07% salary increase, and that's set to take place in 2023. This is also following a 1.48% rate hike in 2022. So inflation in Germany and the Eurozone is around 5.8%. So those working for the European Central Bank, they're in for some hard times because their purchasing power will continually be eroded due to the hidden tax known as inflation. And I understand the optics here. And for the European Central Bank to start paying their employees equal or more than the posted inflationary rate would appear awful. And all the while, the peasants that they serve get wrecked with inflation. And the opposite will look equally as bad, as their staff is unable to get paid enough to maintain their purchasing power year over year. But what hope does the average person have out there after reading a story like this? I think it's time we have to turn to petty theft. It's becoming such a problem out there. In fact, Walmart is considering closing some stores if the rate of theft does not slow down. It's been reported that Walmart is losing $3 billion with a B dollars annually just due to theft alone. Think about that number. That is absolutely massive. And I'm wondering how many of these thieves are going to be prosecuted. I've seen countless videos on Twitter of people, these shoplifters, ransacking stores and just walking out without a problem, without any issues whatsoever. And the last item I want to bring up is this Zero Hedge tweet. And I want to thank Joey for this one. And this is for you, Joey. Hopefully you're watching and listening later on. The New York Fed, they're reporting in income growth expectations just hit record high of 4.5%. The respondents were mostly from people who had at most a high school education. This is manipulation of data to the extreme. And on top of this, they're celebrating this 4.5% record high while the CPI is at around what? 7%? Give me a fucking break. We truly live in a screwed up world. I could go on for quite a bit, but I'd like to hear your thoughts in this clown world, bullshit world we live in.
My favorite economist, Thomas Sowell would say, oh dear, where to begin? And, one of the things, since we're talking clown world, came off of the clown world today, Twitter feed was, and it's all over Twitter now, is a story by, who was this guy? Donna Chad McCarthy, saying that by owning a pet, you are doing more damage to the environment than you might realize. And there's been teasers of how bad owning dogs especially are for the environment through, you know, the climate cultists over the year. But this one sort of seemed to hit a nerve this week. And, you know, I've opined before that if these climate cultists get their way, where this is all headed is, you know, someday we're going to see like influencers doing teary-eyed TikTok videos of themselves euthanizing their dogs and their cats for the climate. That's where these people want to go. But I think this could be a bridge too far because people love their dogs and people love their cats. And so by doing this, they could be overplaying their hand to some extent. One of the other things I was tracking over the last week for my newsletter is what's happening with the consumer. For one thing, store credit cards, this came off of a Zero Hedge piece, with the variable rates going up, retail credit cards are like 30% interest rates now, which I think is actually illegal in Canada because I think it's somewhere in the 20s. You're crossing into usury territory. Well, some of the cards down in the States were north of 30% now. And with the Fed meeting next week, who knows if we get 50, we probably won't get 75. Maybe we'll get 50 for sure. But that's even going to go up even higher. The other thing I wanted to mention, this is sort of in the same bucket. Northman Trader, Sven Henrik, put out he grabbed a graph. This is actually off of FRED, which is one of the greatest data sources out there, the Federal Reserve's own data reporting. And he posted a graph of the personal savings rate. I can't really show it, I guess, off the top of my, like on the screen, but it's basically from 1960 till present moment. It's just kind of like trending, going down a bit, going down a bit, going down a bit. It trends down to 2000, call it six, starts trending up again. I guess that's around the global financial crisis. It starts to trend up again. And then there's this massive vertical spike, hockey stick, straight up. Okay, that's the COVID panic. That's all the stimulus. That's all the stimmies hitting your bank account. And then it's a plunge right down to below trend, the lowest rate ever. So even lower now than it was just when the global financial crisis hit. And there's two things about that I find worth noting. One, so now the personal savings rate is the lowest ever. Credit cards are up around 30%, retail credit cards. And people are, I saw another piece I don't have handy that people are maxing out their credit cards like never before. But the other thing about that personal savings rate is that spike, that hockey stick spike when the lockdowns hit, I find very strange because if this was all stimulus to keep the working class alive while their businesses were shut down and they were all out of jobs, I wouldn't have expected the personal savings rate to rise very much at all. I would have expected it to remain flat because people would be using that stimulus money to keep the lights on at their house and to keep food on the table. But instead, the personal savings rate skyrocketed during that period, which makes me wonder if all of that stimulus that was sent out in you know, the COVID bazookas, if that just went into the wrong hands, like people just went mainly into people that don't need it. The other thing I will mention, maybe the last for now, is just we ran it on Bomb Thrower today. Anonymous friend of mine who used to be a commissioner in a Canadian government entity wrote a little homage to the Club of Rome, who are now 50 years old. So he talked about, you know, six things that he used to believe when he was a young youth and then where we are today. And basically the upshot is we have more to fear from central planners than we do from climate catastrophe itself.
Central planners are a problem because they distort the markets. They don't let the markets run at its own volition or its own momentum. And eventually they distort the market to the point where there's going to be a break in it. And then there's a reaction. And then we get to the point where we're always trying to play catch up. And we have then central banks coming in to try to raise rates. It's just a whole thing of catching up and trying to fix problems which were created due to these ideas. They just don't let the markets play out the way they should. And you touched upon something else too. You touched upon credit cards, people maxing them out these days. And it seems to me that they're using this as one of the mechanisms to deal with rising costs. They're paying for inflation, or at least funding inflation, with credit cards because for the most part, I believe everybody has one, or just about everybody with decent credit or even shitty credit has credit cards. And so it's not that hard to just rack up a high amount of money that's accumulated on your credit card. And people are using that as a way to just maintain their lifestyle or try to maintain their lifestyle. And they're just plugging this into the credit card. Now, that's going to be problematic going forward. Before, even in low interest rate environments, credit card interest was rather high. But now with Canadian interest rates from the central bank being at 4.25%, last I checked, we'll be talking about this soon. Well, credit cards, they follow suit and they raise their rates as well. So people are going to be having trouble with paying off the debt that they are accumulating on this credit card. And I suspect this is going to be like a house of cards that could potentially fall. It's not something you could keep on and just pile on, and eventually you have to pay the piper. You have to pay off the credit card. You just can't keep it the way it is. And that's going to be a problem moving forward. I'm going to hear your thoughts on that.
True. But the other thing about credit cards that I was actually trying to look it up while you were talking. Do you know that there's a credit card in development now that ties your individualized carbon footprint to your credit card? It's a company called Deconomy. Deconomy. And so never mind your debt, which you're already overloaded on now. Now it's going to start, this particular card, it's going to start metering your carbon footprint. And then it said, when I first heard about it, it said it would cut you off when you hit your carbon footprint limit. And I thought, there's no way. This is like urban legend. This is something from the bowels of 4chan. It's not real. I emailed the guy whose site it came off of, Climate Audit or one of the other sites. And he sent me actually the link to the World Economic Forum website that had here it is. And when you hit your limit, you're cut off. So there's this twin sandwich. I mean, it used to be taxation and inflation used to be the vice between which consumers were being ground up by, you know, the powers that be, or just not even powers that be, just dynamics that are outside of their control. Now we're getting a third one added, which is this whole artificial scarcity hysteria around the whole carbon, you know, climate thing. And then it's going to be carbon footprints. And because this actually goes back to, you know, what you were talking about with the US dollar is kind of, everybody knows we're running out of runway for the US dollar as the global currency hegemon, like the world reserve currency. Everybody knows we're moving to a multipolar world. What you were talking about with Saudi Arabia and China and Russia, I mean, once the first barrel of oil gets priced in something else, and I think that's already happened this year, it's over in all but ceremonial terms. So I think my personal theory is that when it all becomes apparent that the US dollar hegemony is over, they're going to try to pivot this thing to sort of get an extra couple decades of runway out of it into a CBDC, into a carbon metered kind of quota system. And that becomes the new, like, never mind the petrodollar, it's going to be the carbon dollar is what's coming down the pipe next.
It's interesting. We also have a credit card in Canada, and I forget the company name that issued it, but they are, with every purchase, it's going to be showing you your carbon usage, and they're going to be able to tell you, give you suggestions on how to limit your carbon usage going forward. So the tying this together, social credit, this all seems to be all part and parcel of one global idea in which they want to implement. That's going to be very scary if they end up doing it.
There's a few of those credit cards, right? There's some in Europe. I didn't know about the one in Canada. And they're using like nudge techniques. In England, there's actually an entire nudge unit that's like, just like, let's just use these like stimulus and try and just get people's behavior to shift in this one direction. But to see a credit card that actually will cut off your spending when you hit the limit, that to me sounded like just conspiracy theory, like, yeah. Where's my tinfoil hat? It's not here. But I had to like look it up and verify it. It's like, yeah, it's taking it to that level. And the last thing I'll say about it before I kick it back over to you, it is a unified theory. It is a global dynamic of this kind of idea. And the reason why I've been saying this for years. There's no climate emergency. There's a debt emergency. All right. There's too much debt. The global financial system is coming off the rail. And the only way to let the air out of that super spike in debt, that super debt cycle, is to try to get everybody to ratchet down their standard of living. Or the way I usually frame it, they want to get everybody else to ratchet down their standard of living, right? Like, they get to fly to COP28 and COP29 on private jets and go to Davos and take a super yacht there, eat, you know, Wagyu steak, and then everybody else has to eat bugs and live in the pod and kill their dog and use the credit card that cuts off their spending when they, you know, take too many hot showers.
You're speaking to the choir. As I talk about what's going on, the hypocrisy that happens at these COP events. And I just want to change gears slightly, because it looks like there's been some breaking news.
Oh, wow.
SPF was arrested by Bahamian authorities. So it looks like he may be extradited to U.S. This is all breaking news, so I'm just getting this information from the people in the chat. That's awesome if that's the case, because today, he had an interview on Twitter Spaces. Unusual Wales was the one that was hosting it. And yeah, he was giving some very, not shady, but dodgy answers. Like, he wasn't answering the questions correctly. Not only that, he was on the Twitter Space answering questions about people. And somebody asked him the question directly, are you playing video games right now? He didn't answer the question right away. He hesitated. And eventually, he admitted that he was playing a video game the same time he was having that Twitter Space. And they tried probing him to see if it was League of Legends.
Yeah.
But he said it wasn't that. But the fact that he's doing that, he goes in these Twitter Spaces and he's talking to the public about what's happened with FTX and Alameda Research. And he's doing that in the same time he's focused on playing video games. It's more just a game to him. I'm not talking about the game he's playing, but I'm talking about the whole situation, which dragged down so many people, including himself, and a lot of money lost. I don't think he understands the severity of what's been done. And I think now, with the fact that he may be extradited to the United States with potential jail time, this is all just speculation on my part. Hopefully now it clues in on him, like, what's going on, what's going to happen with him, because he's pissed off a lot of people, some very powerful people like BlackRock, for instance, took their money and spent it. You know, the user funds was spent and given to himself and his friends to buy up land. Very shady stuff. What are your thoughts on this whole SPF saga?
I was going to remark on, like, why hasn't this guy been arrested? Because I saw one of your items about the Venmo thing. Like, suddenly there's this explosion in $599 Venmo transactions because, you know, the new rule is you have to report $600 transactions and over to the IRS. So everyone's doing $599. And I'm like, you know, I'm not the first person to say it, won't be the last. Why are they going after Joe Sixpack for spending $600 on Venmo and SBF hasn't been arrested yet? And there was a piece a couple weeks ago about how the Attorney General of Bahamas, or whatever the equivalent office there, was like an ex FTX employee or ex FTX, like, in or Alameda Council. So it just really seemed like beyond the pale that this guy is walking around being, unchallenged. I saw an article today that the DOJ was split as to whether they should charge Binance. And I'm like, you know, Binance is a whole different topic, and there's something brewing there that could bubble up. But it just kind of astounded me. It's like, why are they over here thinking about, like, ruminating as to whether or not to charge Binance when you have this clear-cut case of commingling of funds and theft and embezzlement and misuse of client funds? And the most we've got was this sort of weak tea. They've opened an investigation. Like, yeah, okay. Why isn't he in handcuffs yet? I fully expected him when he was, you know, when he went, I thought he was going to show up in person to get a blowjob from Andrew Ross Sorkin. You know, he just zoomed in and got it, you know, got that ovation at the end of it. But I thought he was going to walk in, fly in on a private jet, do the fuzzy wuzzy thing and walk out like a crowned hero and be completely unmolested. But so he's just been arrested. I guess that's breaking news. We'll see what happens now, if anything.
yeah, these are all just very recent developments, so it's all coming in, and it's hard to figure out what's going to be happening moving forward. Well, I guess we'll know in the next few days. I just want to point a couple of things out, that Maxine Waters, and she's part of the whole congressional hearing, I believe, and she's a congresswoman in the United States. Well, just to give you an idea what's going on here, her husband, in fact, was the U.S. ambassador to the Bahamas.
Oh, one time. Small world.
Very small world. And, you know, she's been to the Bahamas, I think, earlier this year to talk about crypto. And there seems to be a connection. I don't want to say that there is, and I don't want to have any lawsuits against me. But just you look at what's going on, it seems rather suspicious. But I do want to also touch base on one thing here. Today, Reuters was reporting that the U.S. Justice Department, they were discussing the potential plea deal with Binance lawyers over possible money laundering charges. So Binance is under the being investigated for potential money laundering. And if that's the case, and if there's a plea deal that's going to be bending around, that means it looks like they were guilty and they're just trying to get away with this with as little damage as possible. But again, Binance was also replying back to that, saying that Reuters was not correct with their reporting. And so this is all very muddied waters right now.
Did you see the other story about Binance, how they moved 170,000 Bitcoin out of their reserve wallet, right? And did you hear about that one?
Where did it go to?
I don't know. So go to Mish Talks. Mish Shedlock wrote a story on it today or yesterday, talking about how, one, Binance is saying, you know, we're fine, our reserves are fine, we've just had an audit done. The auditors kind of disavowed, like, this isn't an audit. We performed some sort of ritual. We waved a dead chicken over it according to directions given to us by Binance, but we wouldn't call it an audit, and we don't really stand by it. And then he referenced a tweet from CZ. It's not even a month old. He put it out on November 13th saying, you know, danger when an exchange has to move a large amount of funds right before or after proving their reserves. Danger, get out. And then like 29 days later, they moved 170,000 Bitcoin out of their reserve wallet. They came back and said they were just moving it to a cold wallet on Tron. I don't know how you move Bitcoin into a cold wallet on Tron unless it's wrapped Bitcoin. And that is like a whole other can of worms in my mind, because I think wrapped Bitcoin is just a shit coin. I don't think it's wrapped Bitcoin.
Yeah, agreed. Tim or
Mish,
Nancy.
Mish.
So M-I-S-A.
Mish Shedlock.
There you go.
And I think his blog is mishtalks.com. Mishtalk.com.
So if something does happen to Binance, they are the largest exchange. I've been talking about there may be some potential red flags. I'm not saying Binance is ready to fall or it's teetering and ready to collapse. I just look at it and I see there's some similarities between them and FTX in some respects. I don't think they're taking money from user deposits and buying up stuff. At least I hope not. But the fact that they issue their own stablecoin, the BUSD,
BNB. It's just a fork of Ethereum.
Oh, that's their own like shitcoin, but they also have
a stablecoin.
Stablecoin, yeah.
BUSD, $22 billion market cap, which means they're supposed to have $22 billion of cash sitting around somewhere. So you said the similarity between FTX and Binance, right? So you had the whole Terra 3AC, Voyager, all that meltdown earlier in the summer, and FTX swoops in as the savior. We know now they were just doing it to almost in a panic to cover up their own exposure and deteriorating financial condition. And so then they went down the crapper. And at that time, Binance was supposed to come in as the white knight. There was rumored for about a day that they were going to take over FTX. And now Binance is like, well, why are you moving $250 million worth of reserves around? Now I wonder, like, are these $22 billion USD? It's BUSD. That's the ticker, I think. You know, are they really there? And speaking of stable coins,
yes, go down this rabbit hole. I know you wanted to talk about this. Go right ahead.
My jury has been out on Tether for about a year. All right. So I've been following, like, you know, Bitfinex on Twitter, and Grant Williams had a great, and Doomberg had a great podcast about it. And it's like, it, you know, it didn't smell good for Tether, but I sort of like, I don't know, we'll see, because they weathered the early storms so well. Like, there was, like, you know, billions and billions of dollars in redemptions, and they just did it without batting an eye. And I thought, okay, it would be very bad if Tether was all a scam. I don't know if they are or not. I don't ever use them. If I have to use a stable coin, I don't use Tether. But then when I saw that the second largest recipient or issuer, I don't know exactly how it works, of Tether was Alameda at $37 billion. And Tether's market cap is $64 billion. All right. And then of that $37 billion that went to Alameda, $30 billion went to FTX. Okay. Now you look at Tether's own website, their own stated policies say that to be issued one UST Tether, you have to get $1 in like whatever, a T-bill, a US dollar. It has to be like, you have to do dollar for dollar. Okay. You're telling me that Alameda gave Tether $37 billion in cash? I don't fucking buy it. I don't believe it, right? I bet you they gave them maybe $1 billion in cash and $36 billion worth of FTT tokens or some other, you know, Serum or Solana or just something that ain't worth $36 billion anymore. Okay, so where is the $37 billion in Tether in the first place? Alameda had seven. They pissed it away. FTX had 30. I don't know. They bought a yacht and some more real estate with it. But more importantly to me, I am calling bullshit that Tether is sitting or received $37 billion in US dollar cash to issue those tokens. So now I'm on the side of like, yeah, I think those guys, kudos to the people doing the early work on it. They're probably right. Okay. Tether is probably inadequately reserved. And when that comes unglued, like that's the end. I mean, that is like, I've been waiting for like that final capitulation blowout for the whole crypto winter for, you know, everything outside of Bitcoin. That would, if Binance goes, if Tether goes, if they both go, it's like, okay, it's smoking ruins from there on in. And then actually, I always used to say, you know, if we wouldn't have bailed out the banksters in the global financial crisis, nobody would have tried that again for 100 years. Okay. Well, here we are in the crypto world, and there's no one who's going to bail out anybody. Right. So everybody is going to go down the tubes, and people are going to go to prison. And that's a good thing, because people are going to realize that, you know, you can't just build a whole Ponzi and walk away with it. Because the other thing about Tether that I was going to say earlier on, actually, Tether told us more about the fiat banking system than it did about crypto, right? Because they're basically minting dollars out of thin air and using it to buy shit, right? That's what the Cantillionaire system is, except they've got central banks to backstop it. When the fiat banking system blows itself up, the central banks will ramp up and print more money. More of this shitcoin called the US dollar, this stable coin that isn't even adequately reserved to itself because it's, you know, losing purchasing power every day. So Tether more mimicked the dynamic of the fiat banking system minus the central banks. So now we're seeing the whole thing. If Tether goes down, Binance goes down, we see what would have happened in 2007 if there were no bailouts. We're going to see it here in crypto. This is what happens. And what we're going to see happen is Bitcoin's going to keep right on going. Real projects are going to emerge on the other end of it that are not built on bullshit. And it'll take a while and it's going to be painful, but we're going to find out who's built their empires on imaginary bullshit tokens, magic internet money.
That's a excellent soliloquy by you. And I just want to point out that Boomer mentions here that you should.
Oh, I know Tom. Special. I've been on his show. Yeah.
Okay, because he's recommending the Guns, Gold, and Goats podcast, because there's been a lot of Tether news that's been bantied on that show. And yeah, there's a few things I just want to say. USDT, Tether, that capitulating will be monumental. It will impact everything drastically. 4-digit Bitcoin will definitely be a reality if that's the case.
Stick a pin in that. I want to come back to that. Go.
No, go ahead. I'll continue my thought after.
Well, here's the thing that, so I have to do some work on this, but the more I think this through, okay? When the FTX balance sheet was leaked and that kicked everything off, they had something like, I can't remember, on the liability side, they had whatever the number was, like 50,000 Bitcoin, right? And on the asset side, like zero or one or like half a Bitcoin, right? Which means, you know, I used to think years ago, this is back in the Quadriga CX days, right? Mm-hmm. Who was actually a long story there. I used to think, what's to stop me from setting up an exchange, not having any Bitcoin, selling people Bitcoin, and then like if somebody wanted to withdraw some Bitcoin, I would just hastily buy some Bitcoin and let them withdraw the Bitcoin. Like, what's stopping me from doing that? And so as I thought that through, I thought, nothing's stopping me from doing that. So people are probably doing that. So I came to the conclusion of like, I shouldn't ever leave any Bitcoin on the exchanges. Fast forward to today, this is what FTX was doing, except they just took it to the extreme. They just went completely overboard with it. FTX may not be alone, especially with this Binance thing today. So where I'm going with all this, and I'm trying to figure out a way to just look at some exchange reserve statements and say, just put together a spreadsheet. I think there is way more Bitcoin, fake Bitcoin, air quote Bitcoin, wrapped Bitcoin, like not real Bitcoin, shitcoin Bitcoin that exists in the world today than there is actual Bitcoin. And then when Tether goes, when Binance goes, when all this stuff shakes out, all of that fake Bitcoin disappears up its own asshole. So what happens to the supply of Bitcoin, of what we think is the market supply of Bitcoin in the world? It collapses in on itself. And so where I keep ending up when I think this through is this could actually be a coming Bitcoin supply shock. Yeah, you could have 4-digit Bitcoin for a few minutes. But as it begins to ripple through the system, that there's a lot less Bitcoin circulating than we thought was circulating. I don't know if I'm missing something or not thinking it through properly, but I just think like if all these exchanges have been selling this fake Bitcoin back and forth to each other, at least some of those people who realize they don't have real Bitcoin are going to want real Bitcoin, and that's going to cause a supply shock, maybe on par with a halving. I don't know.
You're right. I mean, I'm of the same opinion. If there's a lot of this paper Bitcoin that's being sold, and if it comes to a point, a day of reckoning, when people start withdrawing their Bitcoin off the exchange and it doesn't exist, well, the exchange has a couple of options. They could either go belly up, which probably a lot of them will, but some may try to buy Bitcoin in order to meet their obligations. And if they do that, well, then there's going to be less Bitcoin floating around because you're taking whatever supply that's really in existence, buying it up and giving it to the customers that should rightfully have it. And I just want to say this, of the biggest companies that hold Bitcoin, I'm looking at GBTC, I'm looking like Purpose Bitcoin at the ETF, I'm looking at MicroStrategy and all the Bitcoin miners that hold it, like HUT, Marathon, you can name a few other Bitcoin miners that have it on their balance sheet. I believe they have Bitcoin. So I have no problems with them, but it's the exchanges. Those are the ones that I have real concerns. And I don't know what that equates to in total amount of the supply that's out there. It may be a small percentage. It may be a large percentage. I do not know. I haven't put enough thought or effort into looking into this. But yeah, that could be a real problem. But it does highlight the fact, and you said it before, and it was mentioned in our chat, don't leave anything on the exchange. Take your Bitcoin off, put it in cold storage, and sleep well at night. As long as you have access to your keys, you know for sure that you're going to have access to it. And I just want to double back to USDT and Tether. I don't know how they're doing it because, and you said it, they're essentially minting US dollars. If I do the same thing here in my basement, I could tell you within an hour, I'll have authorities at my door knocking on the door and dragging my ass away in handcuffs. And it makes sense because I am essentially creating money out of thin air. I don't know how they could do it at Tether and not have the same implications that I would doing it here. So that's just my two cents with that. And I just want to say one other thing on a somewhat related topic, USDC, the Circle version of the stablecoin. Two things. Number one, there seems to be a lot of thought or FUD that's being thrown out. I don't want to say it's FUD. I mean, there may be some real truth to this, but they may also have some funding issues, number one. But number two, Coinbase, for whatever reason, is backing them. I don't know what this means.
Do you know Coinbase? I didn't know this. Coinbase is a co-founder of Circle.
That could be the connection because they, I think, are transferring everything from USDT to USDC.
They're offering free transfers, free exchange. And I've seen it framed as like a Coinbase attack on Tether. Now, I actually think Circle, USDC, of all the stable coins out there, it's the one I distrust the least, I guess, is the way to frame it. Okay. So if I had to pick a stable coin, and I have a stable coin, it's in Circle. It's in USDC. And the reason I went with them was because I thought because they're supposed to be publicly traded soon, but they shelved their IPO amidst all this stuff. I thought, well, they're going to be publicly traded so that everything's got to be above board. So, you know, what money I have in stable coins is in Circle. But to that point, I was even pulling money out of Circle earlier this year and going into the legacy banking system and telling a friend of mine, like another Bitcoiner, saying, this is the opposite of the way it's supposed to go. We're supposed to be fleeing the legacy banking system because, you know, Trudeau is seizing bank accounts or whatever. Supposed to be fleeing the legacy banking system, going into crypto, and now I'm going the other direction because I'm losing faith in crypto during this contagion. But I actually think that, well, what I heard was that Coinbase was a co-founder of Circle, and this is almost like an attack on Tether. That just, who knows? We'll see.
Okay. I just wanted to point out that back when the Tornado Cash saga was coming into play, Circle, they blacklisted a whole bunch of addresses. So I just want to point out that they have a black eye in that they were able to blacklist certain addresses, which meant that whatever they had on those addresses are going to be null and void and essentially worthless. So USDC does have some problems, or at least a history of doing stuff that is very centralized in nature. So just more food for thought more than anything else. I'm not saying that they're bad or anything. I'm just saying there's a history there.
I know. That's why I describe them as like the one I distrust the least. Yeah.
Yes. Well, you know what? Let's transition to the Canadian news. There's a couple of stories I want to bring up.
Sure. And
we'll start off with Clown World North. And this is something we've recently started up on the CBP. And these are all topics that make us very proud to be Canadian Bitcoiners. And we'll lead things off with the Bank of Canada. They raised rates once again this past week by 50 basis points. And now their policy rate stands at 4.25%. Hopefully, the people that have variable mortgages, they're in a decent position. Same for people that are looking to renew their mortgages or carrying large amounts of credit card debts or any other debt that is impacted by the Bank of Canada's rate hike decision. Sorry?
I heard that Health Canada was going to open MAID eligibility to people who hit their trigger rate.
That's a topic we've talked about.
I'm joking.
No. We've talked about this thing in the past, and it's mind-blowing how process is.
I interrupted you. Go on.
No. We had one story. Retired Corporal Gauthier.
I was telling my wife about that at dinner time tonight. About that.
I reached out to Paralympic Canada. I emailed them and asked if there's a way that I could send a small donation. I want to send some Bitcoin over to her, which hopefully could have her achieve the goal that she wants to install. But I haven't heard back from them. So I'm going to have to try again. And if anybody has any connection with her, please let me know. I'd like to give him a small donation of Bitcoin.
The guy in Hamilton who was going to go with MAID because he was going to be homeless, and he had one of two doctors sign off on it already. Somebody did a crowdfund for him, and he's not going to do it now. And he's got his living arrangement sorted. So good news there. But yeah.
That's awesome news.
Yeah.
I didn't hear that. So good for, and it's sad we have to collectively raise money in order for people to not want to go down the process of, I don't want to talk about anything.
It's crazy. Yeah. Anyway, on with the show. But
yeah. So, I mean, with the Bank of Canada, they raise their rates. It's going to cause real problems with people that have debt. And it is what it is. It looks like the scorched earth mentality that the Bank of Canada is employing might work, or we'll see if it happens. But I can tell you the people that are not going to be working moving forward are people in certain industries like bartenders, waiters, etc., because those are industries that are probably going to be impacted the most once there's less money that is available in the economy, less money that people have to spend. So it's going to be really problematic for those people. But let's move on to COVID benefits. And I want to talk about this a little bit in depth. I know we're a few years removed from that, a couple of years. I want to say that this is partially the reason why Canada's debt ballooned to over $1 trillion. It's not the sole reason, but it's part of it. In fiscal year 2021, Canada, they posted a deficit, a record deficit of $314 billion. If you look at this in Canada's history, and I did, I went back in time. This $314 billion for the single year of deficit that they had, that's more than the combined deficits of the previous 12 years. So that goes to show you how much money they spent in that particular year. So they spent more in that 1 year than they did in the previous 12 years combined. I understand the reason why they did it. They forcefully closed down the economy. So they had to give up money to people in order to avoid what happened during the Great Depression. So I understand the reason, but get this. From the National Post, the Auditor General finds a minimum of $27.4 billion with a B in suspicious COVID benefit payments. And if you think this is going to be recovered, think again. The CRA's, what they quote, is lack of vigor in CERB and other pandemic benefit recovery efforts means the majority of overpayments are not likely to be recovered. So any attempts to recover these funds, well, it's going to fail. It's just not going to happen. So this money's essentially lost forever. And this is in addition to $4.6 billion in confirmed government overpayments solely in double dipping applications for various COVID-19 aid programs. This was launched the first few months of the pandemic. And this is according to the Auditor General. The report chronicles a separate series of eyebrow raising CERB payments, such as a $1.6 billion to individuals who appear to have quit their jobs instead of losing it to COVID-19, 6.1 million to incarcerated recipients, $1.2 million in payments to dead people. So that number I came up with, well, I didn't come up with, I'm reporting it, 27 billion. It's higher than the deficits for most Canada's deficits for most years. So if you look at that 27 billion that's lost in this COVID relief stuff, well, that's higher than the deficit that Canada reported in most years. That's an absolutely incredibly large number. And the CERB benefit, you could almost call it a pseudo UBI. And it was a failure in my eyes in terms of how it was administered. And with that in check here, how much faith do you have that with programs moving forward that's going to be rolling out to give more money that's going to be handed out? Is it going to be done successfully? Well, hopefully they worked out the wrinkles and kinks, because 1.8 million renters in Canada, they're going to get another $500 that's going to help out for rising costs. And if you do the math, that's $900 million that's going to be handed out this month, almost a billion. Canada's total revenue that we rake in is $400 billion annually. So if it gives you some scale of how much money we're talking about, Canada doesn't rake in a heck of a lot of money like it does in the United States. And I gave some telling stats. I'm going to rehash them again. $27 billion gone due to stupid applications that were just, you know, processed. Deficit of $300 billion in 2021. The deficit is greater than the previous 12 years combined. The total debt has ballooned from $720 billion to $1.1 trillion in 2 years. Does all this contribute to rising costs, to inflation? Well, it depends who you talk to. Because if you talk to Jean-Francois Perrault from Scotiabank, well, he says that Canadian inflation is due to mostly temporary foreign, and saying that just it's foreign and temporary measures that is causing these rates of inflation. In fact, he says that government transfers accounts to around 0.45 percentage points of the rise in inflation we have observed since 2009. This is absurd. How did he get these numbers? 0.45% that he's saying, percentage points, he's saying that is attributed to rising costs due to the government spending. This is, if you look at this, throw the shit all out the window, because we have to deal with CPI, which we're being spoon-fed, which we don't, we all are questioning what's the reality of this and concerns of how accurate they are. This guy, I say this guy has a 0.45% chance that these numbers are fucking accurate. And he probably pulled these numbers out of fucking thin air. Just like the Canadian dollar. That's what it is. It's out of thin air. They go to the printer, gets done, and that's how it's done. The reason why inflation, that's why it's so damn high. It's a fucking money came out and just printed it into existence. 25-30% of money was created in 2021. That's the reason why. It's not foreign actors. It's not supply chain issues. It's increasing the supply of money. You make money less scarce, it loses its value, plain and simple. That's my two cents.
Did you ever, this is old, it's about a year old, but did you ever see Mark Carney's tweet thread about there are no libertarians during financial crises?
No, that I didn't see.
Yeah, he said, you know, it was like a 7-tweet thread, and he's like, you know, everyone talks, a libertarian, money shouldn't be printed willy-nilly, and you know, everyone talks a good game when times are tough or times are good, but as soon as a crisis hits, there are no more libertarians. Everybody wants a bailout. And I wrote a piece at the time saying, you know, central bankers take credit for, you know, central banker arsonists take credit for putting out the fires that they start, because what causes these crises is the money printing in the first place, right? Because arguably, I mean, COVID was a big deal, but I think pretty well everybody, even in the mainstream for the most part, kind of knows what there is a huge global overreaction to it. And what's causing the crisis today that we're in economically, supply chain, energy, right? It's not COVID causing that. It's the policy response, the money printing, the interest rates being suppressed for 10 years. That's what's causing the crisis today. COVID was just the catalyst that just brought it all to a head, probably 10, 15 years sooner than it would have otherwise.
Yeah, it was just accelerating. You know, another thing that we didn't really talk about for a long time, because once the economy was shut down and we just went down this path, is the trade imbalance. There's so much money going out the door than it is coming in. And China for a long time was the recipient of this, and it was just getting worse and worse year over year. And that's something you can't maintain long term. 1 or 2 years, 5 years, whatever, that's fine. But eventually you have to stop that. You have to stop sending out more money to buy goods and then them coming in and you're giving them the money for that. It just doesn't make sense long term. Eventually it's going to be a system that fails. So that's something that we should have talked about. We probably should still talk about, because it's a problem that exists. They're trying to rectify it. I know that they have the CHIPS Act, for example, that they're trying to attract more chip manufacturing in the United States. I know that's going to be taxpayer funded. I'm going to probably get roasted for this. There's probably some merit to that, because having more manufacturing in North American soil, in U.S. soil, does make sense, because then you can control the supply chain and you can keep everything within house.
Well, I think, yeah, COVID has made that apparent to everyone. And you know, even the Dems, even the Democrats came into power after Trump are kind of like unspokenly continuing that trajectory that he started the country on of like, look, we can't have all of our semiconductors built in China. Like, this will not do. We have to start doing it here, and we have to start building it here. And no one's really reversed course on that. And thank God for that, because we really do have to reshore all of that production for all of that stuff.
It's going to come at a cost. Not just there's going to be the delay in setting up everything here, and you have to pay for it, setting up the manufacturing and training the people. But once it is ultimately set up, you're then going to be having it produced at a higher price than if it were done in, say, China, Vietnam, or you name it, where you know, labor is much cheaper. So ultimately, then the goods that you buy are going to be much more expensive, or slightly more expensive, somewhere in between those two extremes. And your dollar won't go as far. But on the flip side, though, at least the dollars would hopefully stay within your country and it could circulate in that economy. That's the theory. This is for something for people above my pay scale and also my knowledge that could figure things out. But another thing that to point out is that Apple has also talked about bringing manufacturing into North America. I think they announced it just this past week.
I think something actually happened this week that they're going to close that one. They're going to close that one mega factory and they're moving it to.
It's Texas or something like that, right? Am I wrong?
I didn't know if it was in the States or outside of China, like South Korea or something like that. But it just, or maybe a combination of both. But there definitely was an announcement. Something happened. It's like, this is happening. We're doing this. I mean, there was like almost like a uprising in one of the Foxconn factories in China.
Yeah, I saw that. The footage
zero COVID lockdown, and it's just. What a strange Orwellian dystopian country that is from the outside looking in, you know.
One thing to consider is that the Great Firewall of China, I wonder what it is we are seeing, if this is something that is state sanctioned. I don't know. I'm always taking whatever I'm seeing from China with a grain of salt.
Do you remember seeing the videos at the beginning of COVID from China, like people dropping dead in the streets? And it was like, okay, so that didn't happen anywhere, except now, you know, but
that's for other reasons.
You don't want to get kicked off of YouTube. So we won't
just suddenly deceased. We don't know exactly what happened, but yeah.
Did you see that? I mean, it was almost like from a sci-fi movie or like a dystopian movie, these two sportscasters, I can't remember the guy's name, and they're just, he just finishes saying something and he's just riffing like you and I are. And then the other guy takes over and then he just kind of like just keels over right in the background of the camera. It was like a basketball game or something. It just happened this week. It was surreal watching it. And
I've seen a number of video footages that are similar to what you're describing.
The guy during the Emergency Act inquiry.
Yeah, that's another one that a lot of people have seen. And there was another athlete that we saw I forget which sport it was. I think it was a female. And she just, like, in the middle of it, just, you know, dropped dead. Oh, no, it was, she was working out. That was what it was. Mm. She was in the gym working out. And she just, I don't know what she was doing. She had a couple of dumbbells in her hand and just keeled over. And fortunately, they reported that she passed away. So many of these things you hear. I don't know. We'll keep moving on. There's a couple of more.
Something to see here.
Yeah, nothing to see here. I have one more Canadian story that I want to bring forth here. And the CPP, everybody knows CPP in Canada, the Canadian Pension Plan. Well, they're going to not be moving ahead with any what they call crypto investments. And the reason being is that they saw what happened with FTX. And already some investors and at least two pension plans, got a rug pulled in the past 6 months. For a variety of reasons, and they don't want to be one that's going to be added to the list. So they're no longer going to be pursuing any opportunities in that sector, according to Reuters, which can be a potential missed opportunity. So from what I gather then, they're probably not going to be adding even spot Bitcoin to their balance sheet, which, you know, they are a pension plan, so they have to be very conservative in nature. But let's be perfectly honest, what could they purchase that's going to give them the protection they need moving forward? Bonds, well, they're picking up in terms of their yield but that's the result of the central bank raising rates. The stock market, you have no idea when that's going to turn around. So they really don't have many options available to them. And perhaps Bitcoin, even a small allocation to Bitcoin might make sense. But it looks like, unfortunately, it's no longer the case. Very sad for us. But what are your thoughts on that?
GameStop.
Do you think they're going to put any money in that, or I haven't heard that name in a while, to be honest. What's the latest on GameStop?
I haven't been keeping track, but I looked into CPP's investment you know, fund a few years back when they bought, when they went into Skype. Like, I couldn't believe they went into Skype, but they actually made money on that deal. So what do I know? But when I looked at what they were invested in, they had so many positions that it felt like they were almost quasi indexing, right? It's like, why are you even trying to actively manage this fund? You have so much stuff in here. You should just index and be done with it. But we're in Canada. Let's say you're not going to allocate to Bitcoin. They should be buying gold at least. I mean, you know, we're one of the biggest gold producers in the world, and our central bank doesn't even own any anymore. They sold the last of it in, I don't know what year it was, 2015, something like that, 2015-16. Buy some gold. I mean, I'm just saying this on the premise of like, okay, you're specifically excluded from putting 1% into Bitcoin, which I would recommend for any fiduciary. But all right, bonds are like, I wouldn't touch a bond with a 10-foot pole ever. Just because I just think the yields aren't going up as fast as the decay rate on the currency. I think my base case thesis for Bitcoin is that the global sovereign bond bubble bursts at some point, and like even 1% of that moving into Bitcoin like puts Bitcoin a lot higher than it is now. A lot higher. So we're not in an environment anymore where we have $20 trillion of negative yielding bonds anymore, but I think we'll get back there. Right. And even if they're not, even if all the bonds are positive yielding, they're still negative real rates. I mean, what's really inflation? What's the official Canadian CPI rate?
It's got to be two digits. And what that number is, I don't know, low teens. It's definitely not
the actual rate. Like, what's the official Canadian CPI rate? Well,
officially, it's, I don't know, six and change.
Right.
And but it's, the reality is much, much higher than that. Maybe
it's got to be 12, 15.
Right? Yeah.
It's somewhere around there. Your bonds are losing money just by owning them. Like, bonds are over. Bonds are a 50-year bull market coming to an end, or 40 years or whatever it is. So, I mean, what do you buy? That's one of the big tough questions these days, is what do you buy? It's one of the toughest investing markets of all time, right? Real estate, I don't know. Canadian real estate looks like it's going to go down the tubes.
For sure. As long as rates go up, it's going to make it harder to get the capital required to buy homes at the prices that they were selling for the past year or before that. So prices have to come down. Eventually, they'll go back up. When? I don't know. But even then, you're still dealing with the whole market, the whole real estate market, which could be problematic for some people. If you want to liquidate quickly, it's hard to do so. And you could get rug pulled. You saw, you know, what happened earlier this year for people that were in Ottawa. They got the accounts frozen. Same thing could happen potentially with, if you have real estate. You never know. You don't really own your home or whatever piece of real estate. It could be just rug pulled from you at any time. It's just,
have you been following the Netherlands, what they want to do with the farms? Like, they want to shut down, like, they want to buy out a bunch of farmers, right? But they say if they don't have enough willing sellers, then they're going to do mandatory buybacks. So, like, farmland, right? You always hear alternative investors going, oh, farmland's the greatest investment. It's just, it's kind of under the radar. Nobody pays a lot of attention to it. It's great. Yeah, it's great until the government nationalizes your farmland.
I agree. It's happened in a lot of places, and slightly off topic, but if you look at what happened in Hamilton when you were talking about it doing an LRT in that city, they expropriated, I think that's the correct term, the land from people, and they did it at a rate which may not be as advantageous for the people that were living there. So really, they have the ability to do it. If they have a legal document showing that they could do it, they could action it. And that's something with real estate, which it's a question. Some people like it. In Canada, it's been absolutely fantastic for the past little while, but moving forward, who the heck knows? And yeah, so somebody made a recommendation. I know this is going back a little bit about what we were talking about, information coming out of China. And Narwhal Tacos was recommending a show called The China Show, and it's a channel on YouTube, and he's saying this for solid signal on what's happening in China from many angles. So that's for people listening. Check it out. It seems like it's a good show to get some information out of China. So that's it for the Canadian side. I do have a couple of items on the rest of the news I want to bring up. And I'll start off with Nexo, and that's an exchange. And they have announced this past week that they're going to be leaving the U.S. market. And they do so, they say it's a regrettable decision, but it's necessary for them. So they're going to be phasing out their products in the United States, and this is due to a lack of regulatory clarity. That's the official reason. I'd love to know what the unofficially what it is.
Like with translation, we have to flee the country.
Things that they're not fully funded, you know, by the time when they're forced to provide the documentation, it's going to show that it's another FTX waiting to happen. So I don't know.
Where are they based? Are they a U.S. company?
I have no. I've seen that name multiple times. I don't know. They must be a global exchange, given the fact that they say they're leaving the U.S. market. Where they're going and where they're going to be continuing to set up shop, who the heck knows? Probably Bahamas is going to probably take up the old location of FTX for all I know.
Just sublet there, right? Sublet, take over their lease.
It's a good value over there. Yeah. And so I'll transition. Next one is that apparently there's in Las Vegas, of all places, now you could get odds for which is the next exchange to declare bankruptcy. And they listed a whole bunch of exchanges that they think they're going to be declaring bankruptcy. So top of the list, the one that you're going to get the least return is crypto.com, and it's a plus 200 Vegas odds. Incredible stuff that they're going to be doing. So the fact that you could bet on which exchange is going to be failing next.
No, I love that.
You hit it big.
Because, for one thing, the betting odds are almost giving you the most accurate signal these days, right? So like when the Canadian mainstream media was telling you that John Charest was going to be the next Conservative Party leader, you just had to look at the betting lines and you knew it was going to be Poilievre by a landslide. It was right there. The numbers were right there. So you look at an exchange and you think they're going to go down the tubes. Like the joke when FTX was going down the tubes, it's like, how do I short FTT without having to go into FTX to do it, right? Because what good does it do to short it if you're trapped in the exchange? So now if you can just bet on the exchange without having to short their token inside yet another bullshit exchange that's offering derivatives, then that's a way to actually monetize the downfall of these exchanges, the bullshitty ones, from an external position on the field. You don't have to get your hands dirty inside the crypto itself. I was shorting Solana during the meltdown. Mm-hmm. I was shorting it in KuCoin, right?
Ooh, they're listed here, by the way.
Oh, yeah. I figure. What are the odds on them?
350. They're the third highest for that might fail.
Right in the middle of my trade, I'm like, I did really well on it. I'm like, oh, you know what? I'm going to take some chips off the table. I log in. It's like, oh, we've temporarily suspended withdrawals for maintenance. I'm like, okay, I just got rugged. I'm fucked. I'm just, I'm one of these schmucks now. And then incredibly, 6 or 8 hours later, they reopened withdrawals. And so I just swept it all off the table. But,
Interesting. I'm looking at the list here, and Robinhood is also on the list at a plus 900. So they're not really top of the list, but the fact that they're ahead of companies like Kraken and Binance US, Robinhood, wow, because they're quite a large in trading equities, right? When you buy stocks and bonds, and you could do some, maybe not bonds, but at least fractional shares.
Where's Robinhood. Coinbase?
Not listed.
Yeah.
On this.
See, Joey and I, we like the Coinbase.
Go ahead with that. Run with that.
I actually think Coinbase, for all the heat they take, are actually one of the more even Steven players in the field. Like I liked, when that OFAC compliance rule came out, the Tornado Cash thing, they were actually in there sending, they've got their own army of lawyers. They have their own forensic analysis team. They have their own intelligence unit. They have their own forensics. And even law enforcement agencies hired them to do that kind of work. they came up through Y Combinator. I mean, I said all this the last time I was on the show. I don't want to sound like a broken record, but they strike me as the way a crypto company, like even a crypto without like the bad connotations to the word, the way a company should be run. Okay. They came up through Y Combinator. They live and breathe this stuff. I just see them playing it like, you know, they're playing it straight up. No hijinks, no games, right? They're playing the long game, and I think they're going to win it. And so we got on this topic because they were not on the betting sheet, right? That's how we started rolling there. Yeah, so and then like Joey is the only other person who's like into Coinbase around here.
I guess he's long on it, but it's just at least my perception is it's due to the timing at which he purchased some shares at Coinbase.
Yeah. You could sort of short-term trade just became a long-term hold. One of those deals.
Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, that's my perception. Me
too, to be honest. But
I'm looking at Coinbase, and I mean, I don't want to talk too much about them, but I look at the amount of money they spent on their NFT platform, which has been an absolute bust. And they have quite a bit of, not exposure, but it's less to do with Bitcoin, and it's more to do with shitcoins. And given the fact that the market has been very turbulent, especially in the shitcoin market, I'm wondering how much this is impacting Coinbase. And not just that, now with the fact that you see that maybe the SEC might come hard on these shitcoins as they are supposed to be securities or registered as securities, that's going to impact Coinbase's bottom line because they are no longer strongly affiliated with Bitcoin. So if they're going to lose a lot of sales, a lot of potential sales moving forward of shitcoins, it's not going to be easy for them to pivot and start selling Bitcoin as the alternative because people have went elsewhere.
They're not going to have to. I mean, for one thing, they're becoming the institutional front runner. So
you're right in that.
My basic theory is we're headed for a world, right? I call it the great bifurcation. We're headed for the world where most of the population or a big chunk of the population lives on CBDCs in their phone. Their lives are gamified. Their carbon footprints are metered, right? And then there's going to be this other world of people who have assets in, I'll call it digital assets. It includes Bitcoin. It includes shit coins. It includes other digital coins that are somewhere in between. And in between these two worlds are going to be these toll gates and these on-ramps and off-ramps, which are going to be heavy regulated, KYC, and they're gonna take a piece of every digital bit moving in or out. Coinbase is one of those anointed gatekeepers. I think that's it. It's a done deal. They own Checkpoint Charlie between fiat world and CBDC world and crypto world. And that's why, you know, I want to own a piece of Checkpoint Charlie.
Have you looked at their bond issuance moving forward?
Their bond is trading at like, what is it now? It's
a very, very high number where it used to be, say, a year or two ago. So I'm wondering if they're in a need for cash, how are they going to be, if they need to raise capital, how are they going to do it? And
they'll get it.
I don't know.
Someone, BlackRock will give it to them or something. They've got $5.5 billion in cash right now. So last time I looked.
Didn't realize you're a Coinbase bull. I like this.
You still want me on the show? I can.
I have no problems talking to anybody who's bullish on Coinbase because I'd like to bring an opposing view to that, and we could discuss and hopefully come to an amicable agreement at the end. If not, we at least hashed it out as best we can.
Yeah.
And speaking of hashing out, let's talk about the difficulty adjustment that took place in the Bitcoin network, and it had the largest difficulty drop since July. So it went since July 2021, in fact. So it's been a long time.
The China thing.
That was a little bit after that.
Okay.
But that was part of the whole process. Yeah. It was May, was the China ban. And the difficulty dropped 7.32%. So if you want to have the specific number, there you go. And it looks like now moving forward, it's going to be a challenge for a lot of miners out there to make ends meet, given the price of Bitcoin right now standing at 17,186, according to my block clock behind me. So they are unplugging equipment that is non-profitable, and probably they're also doing other equipment which may be just on the verge of being profitable. So this is causing a real problem with the hash rate. It's not gone down a significant amount that's going to cause us problems, but it's noticeable for people that are mining. I want to hear your thoughts on this big drop in the difficulty adjustment.
Well, I wasn't keeping track of the difficulty adjustment, but I know miners in general, it's been blood in the streets for, I don't know how long now, but, you know, probably since at least April of this year, right? And I know people in the business who have exited the business and they're just like, okay, I'm done. They sold their companies and stuff like that. Yeah. Private transactions, not public ones. So the contrarian in me is like, I would love to raise a fund that just does special situations and distressed workouts and start, you know, picking up some of these miners at distressed prices. I think some of the publicly traded ones are at better values now than, you know, when I first started buying them in 2019, 2020, right? I mean, there's some real steals out there if you can get the ones that are going to survive, right? So it's just a matter of really like who can keep the lights on. We talked about this offline the other day. Safedean just put out a whole 2-hour podcast about why Bitcoin mining is the shittiest business in the world to be in. And he makes a pretty compelling case for it. And he draws a good analog to, you know, gold mining is like the crappiest business in the world to be in, even though they're producing gold. So I still think there's going to be some big winners who can weather this. This could be a consolidation opportunity. This could be the people who can accumulate hash power now, and then when the next ramp comes, when the next leg up comes, if you don't have to like lever up or issue equity to buy hash power to try and grow faster than the network rate because you bought so much now, then you can just kind of ride that curve up. But the trick is who is it, right? Who are the ones who are going to be able to do it? We had some thoughts on it. I think Hut is one of the survivors. You had some thoughts on Bitfarms, right?
Yeah, Bitfarms, I think they're in for some troubling times, especially now that Quebec is going to be preventing, or not really preventing, not allowing that many miners to expand. And they operate primarily out of Quebec. They also operate in Washington, the state of Washington, and in Peru and Argentina. But still, their primary operations is based out of Quebec. But not only that, they levered up heavily against their equipment. And so
didn't they liquidate that debt when they, because they sold half their HODL, right?
Yeah, they sold almost.
They sold half. They had 5,000 and then they had 4,000. They went down to 2,000. They're back at like 2,400 now.
They remember too, they purchased a whole bunch of Bitcoin. I don't remember the exact amount, in the $40,000 range. And they were doing that at a time they thought it was advantageous to buy the Bitcoin rather than mine it. And so that they, you know, that was part of the loss because they ended up selling that Bitcoin. So I'm looking at that and it's now going to be more difficult to raise capital moving forward as a Bitcoin miner, because who the heck would want to lend money to a Bitcoin mining company right now? So I think Bitfarms is going to have some real issues. Boomer is saying that he thinks that maybe they might get nationalized, which would be very interesting if that's the case. But ones to look at, I mean, CleanSpark might be one. They're doubling down now on the bear market. And so they're buying up stuff on the cheap. So if this bear market turns around, CleanSpark is going to be in a very good position because they purchase things at a discounted price. But I also look at a company like DigiHost, where they have almost nil in terms of debt. And that's a company that if you look at, they could survive the bear market for quite some time, just the fact that they don't have any debt. And if they wanted to, if worse comes to worse, they could take on some debt. And so when things start turning a little bit more sunny in the next little while, they're in a position to reap their rewards for that. So that's what I'm looking at. But yeah, companies like Core Scientific, good luck. Argo, good luck. I think they're next on a chopping block to say they're done. And yeah, that's my two cents with Bitcoin mining. I don't want to say too much about it because it's been a very challenging year and 1 month with Bitcoin miners. It's been a really it's been a downward market for them for the past 13 months. Very interesting. But that's it for the show. We'll transition to the second part of the show, which is the Bitcoiner and no-coiner of the week. I don't have the graphic, unfortunately. This is brought to you and brought to all of us by Tahini's. Check them out if you are in Southern Ontario. Great place to have lunch or dinner. And as Joey says, at Tahini's, it's always a bull market. And I think they opened up another location in Orillia very recently. So they keep expanding even in this bear market. Good for Tahini's. And I'm not sure if you have a Bitcoiner or no coiner of the week, but I have both.
I don't. So
I'll go with mine. My Bitcoiner of the week is the co-host that should be here, but he's in Jamaica. And why is he my Bitcoiner of the week, Joey? It's because even though he's in Jamaica with his lovely wife, he's still taking a great deal of time to shitpost on Twitter. Good for him. He's still keeping up with his daily quota for talking about Bitcoin and shitposting on a lot of different things. That takes a commitment, because if I was in the sunny spot like he would be, I would put my phone away.
I was wondering about that. I'm like, aren't you supposed to be in Jamaica right now? Like, why are you tweeting at me today?
Yeah, well, you know what? For that, he is my Bitcoiner of the week. And it's the first time he's ever made the list. So good for Joey. I hope he's watching, but he's not, it looks like. So he's going to have to listen to this later on. Nobody tell him that he's my Bitcoiner of the week. I want him to
pick it up. Yeah, let's
see if he listens in. Yeah. My no coiner of the week is the gentleman by the name of Jean-Francois Perrault from Scotiabank, who came out with that report saying that the inflation that we're experiencing in Canada is due to outside, mostly temporary and foreign reasons. And it's not due to the fact that money printing is the problem for this. And he accounts government transfers for around 0.45 percentage point for the rise in inflation. I can't believe he reached that percentage point exactly. It's incredible he's able to pull this out of thin air. But the fact that he's come to this conclusion, we all know it's money printing that's causing the problem. I don't give a shit what you say about fucking supply chains or foreign actors or anything like that. It's all about making money less scarce. And you're devaluing it. It's debased. That's the reason why things cost so much more. And that's why he is my no coiner of the week. And with that, we are done. Mark, thank you very much. Before we sign off, just want to rhyme off the price of Bitcoin. Do you happen to have it handy?
17,151.41. 1.2% over the past 24 hours. So
we went down in the past hour and change since we started the show. That's not
very. What did I say it was at the beginning? 1.4% or 1.2?
It was 17.2, I think we started. 17.2.
So we've shaved off $50.
Yeah, not good. So in Canadian dollars, we're 23,376. Now, before we sign off and go to the after show, which everybody on the audio side should certainly tune into the YouTube and check it out, I want to hand it off to you, Mark. Number one, thanks for coming in and filling in for Joey. Awesome job. Number two, where could people find you once you disappear from our show and probably come back again as another guest in the near future? So no. Where could people listen to you or hear you or read about you?
Thanks for having me on. I love your show, so it's been a thrill to be a co-host here. My day job, like I said, easydns.com. We accept Bitcoin. We are pro-free speech, so when angry Karens come knocking saying that you said something mean to them on the internet and we should take your website down, we will not do that. And then I blog on bombthrower.com and write the crypto capitalist or the Bitcoin capitalist, whatever it's going to be by the time I get that transition done.
We look forward to that transition. So thank you very much for filling in for Joey. Thank you for listening in. And with that, everybody, take care, and we'll see you all on Wednesday. I just want to make note that I'll be interviewing the nuclear Bitcoiner on Wednesday. So if you have any questions to do with small nuclear reactors, send them in. I'll be happy to ask them. And with that, take care, everybody.